name is Lewis Turner. I was born in Bedford in 1928 on what is now 76 Union Street, what was then called River Road. It was a wonderful place to grow up, and I'll give you an idea of what it was like living there in the early days. Back in the early days, we had no power on River Road at that time. And I'll use River Road, or would you rather I use Union Street?
Whatever you want, yeah.
Because I think of it still as River Road.
Perfect.
As I say, we had no power, so we had no refrigerator. My father dug a hole in the rocks across a little brook, and they made what we called a well house that was a refrigerator. And there were shelves that went down. The bottom ones were in the water, which where we put the milk, and then the other were for meat and other perishable articles. We had a garden in back and a little outhouse behind the barn, and we had a woodshed for our fuel. And my father cut the wood on our property for it to heat the house. We used a bit of coal. We had an old wood stove in the house and a wood box. And we had, in the wintertime, the back part of the house was pretty well closed in the wintertime. During the day, and of course, you'd go upstairs, but there was no heat in that part of the house, except if you had visitors, which we had a wood stove in the living room. So it's quite a bit different than it is today. I had two sisters, but they were a couple of years older than I was, so I was sort of alone, but I entertained myself. I remember as, you know, a very young child, playing on the kitchen floor with the box of kindling, making houses and making a tent out of blankets over a chair and amusing myself. As I get older, I spent a lot of time outdoors, and that was sort of prelude to my life. I've been an outdoor person all my life. I have hard time coming up with things to say, but I've had a lot of great memories. There were, I think, five houses on Union Street at that time, and there was an older gentleman, Mr. Willis, who had a little farm, and he used to plow the road in the wintertime with an old white horse and a wooden V-plow with rocks on it. And there was a ball field up beyond us, and all these suburban areas used to come and play ball there. And I guess they hit too many foul balls in his garden, so he dug it up eventually. It must have been his property. But it was a real, you know, real rural area. And every spring when the snow melted in the woods and the lakes melted, then the river came up and flooded the road. And as I got older, we had to go through the woods to school in the spring, which, you know, followed out over the years. Until they tore the dam, which was Tolson's Dam, at the end. Yeah, I remember the early days growing up on River Road, and the winters were much, much colder. We got fall and snow, we got the fall, and the leaves, of course, all turned. And way back then, if you know Union Street, the River Apartments, it was an old barn. They had horses and cows there, and it belonged to the Roys. And they converted it into apartments. But in the old days, there was a stone wall that started at that point, and it went right up to the rifle range, which is several kilometers, as you can imagine. And I can remember, like, coming home from school in the fall, and it was all trees along there, and the leaves would build up along the stone wall. I can remember walking swoosh, swoosh through the leaves. Then in the winter came, and of course, it was plowed with an old wooden plow with a horse, and it was packed down, and you walk and you'd hear the snow squeaking under your feet. It was cold, and a lot of nice memories. And of course, the other thing was the river flooding over the road in the spring and having to walk through the woods. And the Fort Sackville Foundation have a picture of old Charlie Willis coming in the road with his horse and through the water. And it was a good life as a kid, and of course a little older. Snowshoeing, and not snowshoeing, but skiing. I didn't snowshoe until later, but and there was always lots to do. It was really country, you know. I'd go out the back door, and there'd be nothing between there and Lucasville. So I grew up in the woods pretty well. And I can remember being up behind the rifle range one time, and I was probably only 10 or 11 years old, and I ran across a big rhododendron tree growing in the woods, and one of the ladies on the street was quite a gardener, so I said, "Would you like a nice rhododendron?" "Oh, yes." Her name was Drusie Willis, and her husband was a shoemaker here. But anyhow, another fellow and I went up and took some shovels and stuff and dug it out and cut a couple of trees and tied it on and carried it out. And you could follow where we got it because of the blossoms. It was in full blossom, and it's still growing there. And that would be back in the early 30s, probably.
Wow.
Not early, but mid or so, and it's still growing there by the side of the garage. So, you know, I pretty well grew up in the woods. But we had, you know, as teenagers, growing up as teenagers, we all went down to what was then the tennis club, or the Bedford Club, they called it. And they had tennis and boating, and now the Bedford Basin Yacht Club. But, I mean, they had an old piano in the dance hall there, and we'd canoe or play tennis, and we'd get in the old wooden boat and row over to Admiral's Rock, some of the boys, and we'd put up our hammocks and stay there for days and live off the basin. It was, you know, you couldn't have found a nicer spot. And then later I had a canoe. I've always had a canoe since I was old enough, and still have one. No, it was really great growing up in Bedford, but I wasn't much of a scholar. I left school in grade 8, but was never without work. But as a teenager, I used to do a few jobs around Bedford. I worked, delivered drugs for the drugstore, and there was one house that I kept the furnace going. And I used to bring the mail in off the train. At that time, the post office was in the railway station, and the train would come to Sydney, and they dropped the mail off, and there'd be maybe 8 or 10 bags. So I would carry that in every day, and I got to be quite a husky young fellow. And I guess if anybody wanted something done, they would call me. I remember during the war, they had a guard on the railway bridge. And if he wanted a day off or a night off, he'd call me, and they had an old Ross rifle, and I don't know if it ever had any bullets for it. I didn't know how to shoot it anyhow. It was just symbolic more than anything. And the radio station CHNS had a transmitter station. They called it CHNS Hills Valley View Subdivision now. It was originally Morrell's Farm. If the guy that ran the station, if he and his wife wanted a night out, then I slept behind the transmitter. And so it was different life, and it was a lot of adventure. And during the war, there was a trail going to the rifle range, and there were thousands of soldiers stationed there for training and before they went overseas, and they used to travel the road past our place, and my parents used to quite often invite them in and for a meal. So we met a lot of people that way. And we also had some airmen come in, and I don't know how they made contact with all these people, but they used to entertain them quite a bit. And we had a sergeant from the rifle range and his wife staying with us towards the end of the war. And I remember 1945, he was a sergeant, and he and I were sitting on the step after supper talking, and we had a big yellow birch tree in the yard, and first thing the trees took to shivering and shaking, and first thing the big cloud came up, and it was the magazine blowing up. So we were, he jumped, he of course didn't have any idea what it was. The war actually was just over then, and he jumped on his motorcycle and headed back to the rifle range. So that was a sort of an experience. And the night of the explosion, some of the other boys and I sat on the lawn down in Bedford, and we had a great view of it there, so we sat all night and watched the fireworks. And so it was a great life. I remember when we were very young. Of course, we had no bathtub. We used to go up the river for our bath every Saturday night. The family would go up and take your soap and have your bath and your swim. And there were several swimming holes in the river. There was another one down further. They called it the boom, and the reason they called it that was that they ran logs down the river from McCabe Lake and Weber Lake and Tomahawk to Moyers, and they supplied Moyers lumber mill with lumber down through there. And if they got logs jammed up down below, they would close the boom and hold the logs back. And that was quite a thing in those days. They have pictures, the manor house, of the basin, full of logs and boom, and them running down the river. But that was before my time. I don't remember that actually. But back where they logged, I used to, some of the other guys and I used to hunt and fish back there, and there were some camps, a couple of camps we used to take. There was an old log camp that was built by some of the older guys in Bedford, and it was on Sandy Lake, which is where the golf course is now, Glen Arbor. And we had the log camp on the other end of it, and we fixed the camp up, and we used to use that. I used to have more than once I've walked from home up to the camp from Bedford, which is the other side of Lucasville, so it's a fair walk. But it was all part of growing up and traveling the woods. And my father worked at Moyer's Chocolate Factory. He was a chocolate maker, and he used to travel back and forth to work on his bicycle. And as I got older and started school in the early days, he would get off work around 3 o'clock, so he'd had a cushion on his bicycle, and he'd pick me up and drive me home from school. I left school in grade eight. I wasn't a good student. I couldn't study. I couldn't read and retain it. So I left school in grade eight, and I went to work at Simpson's in Halifax, and from there I went to the Imperial Oil office in Water Street, and I had a very, very impressive title. I was a junior stationery clerk and letter opener. So then I went from there to Ross Print and worked there a couple of years, and then Curtis Chipman opened King's Clothing Store in Bedford, and he asked me to work for him. So I worked for him in the store, and in 1950 I went with the telephone company. And so I worked there 38 and a half years and retired in 1988, so that's 29 years ago. So I've been retired a while, but I still have my memories of growing up in Bedford. I remember being working at Imperial Oil when the war ended, and everybody was out in the street dancing, and then, of course, there was the VE Day riots in Halifax, and I went home. I didn't stay in for that. But I can remember the days of, during the war, when there were thousands of soldiers around Bedford, and Sunnyside Restaurant was a round spot on both ends, around part of the building, and then in the middle was an entertainment center, and then the left hand was the dance hall, the right hand side was the restaurant where they sold fish and chips and hamburgers and all that good stuff. And across the river, they ran a pipe across and electricity, and they put a long pipe and put garden hose nozzles on it, and they sprayed up in the air, and then they put colored lights behind it, and it was just like a rainbow. And people used to come from all over, from Halifax and everywhere, and they'd buy an ice cream and sit and watch the rainbow in the nights. It was quite impressive. And, of course, they had the dances at the... They'd have with a band on the weekend, they'd have dances, and the soldiers would all come down to dance with the local girls, and it was quite a spot. And I can remember quite often they'd have church parades on Sunday, so all the soldiers would march down to different churches every Sunday, and it was quite an exciting time for Bedford at that time. There were thousands of people there, and of course a lot of the Bedford girls married soldiers. In fact, my sister married a guy from Quebec. Yeah, so, she actually, it was her second marriage. She married Well, he was from the valley, but he worked here for the power company, but he was he'd lost his life on the job, and so she remarried after a few years. The Bedford Club, it's Bedford Basin Yacht Club now, but it was donated by a dentist who lived next door to it, Dr. E.P. Innes, and he donated the property to the people of Bedford. And they built the, it was called the Bedford Club at that time, and it was tennis and boating, basically. And that's where we pretty well all grew up. We played tennis or just hung out or swam off of the dock or boated. But you know, it was a big part of, and that's where I met my wife, and I guess a lot of the others did too. But Bedford was a good place to grow up, because although we had a lot of people that were well to do, they were no different than us. We all associated together, and you know, it was really a good spot to grow up. If you had a boat, you had your boat there, and you know, you'd go sailing with somebody else, or more or less live off the basin, on the basin, or whatever. I can remember a friend of mine, somebody came in to visit them from Sweden, and she said she loved eels, so we took her over to Admiral's Rock and caught some eels, and there were some guys that used to visit us that were on a ship that was in Halifax being converted to a troop ship, and they brought us out a couple of a lot of the stuff in the boat was going off, so they brought us a couple of copper frying pans. So I took the frying pan over to Admiral's Rock and fried up the eels, and then I couldn't get the taste out of the frying pan. I finally threw it in the woods. It's still over there somewhere between Admiral's Rock and the magazine. I should take a metal detector and go see if I can find it. But I don't know how all these people found our place, but the parents used to entertain them and bring them supper, and they were. In fact, I have on my wall a picture. It was the I'll think of it in a minute. The name of the ship. Anyhow, we have a oval beveled mirror on our wall that they gave us when they were converting the ship. They were getting rid of a lot of stuff. So it's memories. And then my mother got tuberculosis, and she was laid up in bed for a year. But it was a nice community. Of course, people don't realize it now, but from where the railway station is, over Ray Fredericks and Schuritz to the Catholic Church, on the left-hand side was all businesses. And you look at it now and say, well, how could there be? There's not room, but there was. A dozen businesses along that side, and the church was there. And then in 1938, they put in the new highway, the cement highway, which is was the first one around, and all those buildings came down. So it's it changed a lot in a hurry. But in those days, of course, you knew everybody, and there was an Acadia store down by the Catholic Church that came down, and then they went to another store up by the railway station, but they had an old horse that they used to deliver with, and one night two or three of the boys were up at our place and were sitting around talking. It was dark, my parents were out somewhere, and first thing we heard this noise in the yard, so we turned on the outside light and snuck over, and it was the Acadia store horse. He got out and he was eating our garden. So we had our bicycles, and of course there were no street lights at the time, so we decided we'd get him back to the barn. So we get him going down the road, and we're going down in the dark with the horse thump, thump, thump ahead of us. Anyhow, we get to the Acadia store, and the barn was up behind, and there was a driveway going up. So we ran up the driveway, and when he got up the hill, the barn was closed, so he turned around, ran down, and when he ran down the hill, there was a car coming, and he ran in the side of the car. He didn't hurt himself or the car, but one of the guys said, well, you were there, why didn't you jump in front of him? And I said, he wasn't going to stop for a car, he wasn't going to stop for me. So that was another story. And eventually, in 1939, a firebug burnt down the store and the station, and it, and a couple of other places he tried to burn, but didn't. and he was finally caught. And of course, everybody knew who he was. You know, when 1939, there was a firebug in Bedford burning down some of the buildings, and eventually he was caught. But they didn't have a fire department, but they just had ladders and fire buckets and axes at different places in the community. And after that, they formed a fire department in 1939. And as a teenager at that time, and eventually after they got organized, they built a rink where Arby's is, not Arby's, where Mark's Work Warehouse is now. And so I used to go over and help them flood it. I was 16, and they asked me to join the fire department. So I was the youngest member ever in the fire department. But it turned out that I joined the air cadets at the same time, and they both met at the same night, so I left the fire department and stayed in the air cadets. And then I eventually went back in the fire department in about 1952, I think, and I was there for 22 years until I developed a heart problem, and I had to retire at that time. But I was a chief back in around 62, I guess, for 2 or 3 years, and then I decided that that wasn't the job for me. I didn't like paperwork, and I'd like to be in the thick of things. So I didn't run for chief anymore. But anyway, it was a great organization. You met a lot of people, and you know, it was a really good organization. Met a lot of friends, and we did a lot of stuff together beside firefighting. But we spent a lot of time in training, and we were well organized and probably better trained than a lot of the paid departments were, because we did it because we wanted to. And there were a lot of good organizations in Bedford. I had got involved in various things. Usually, quite often, helps because of your family, I guess. Had a son, so I got involved in the Boy Scouting movement, and I was a troop leader for a while. And I took a bunch of scouts down Cape Breton 2 years in a row. A friend had an old school bus, and I think 23 or 24 of them, and we went down Margaree and went up in the highlands and hiked across the highlands and down into the valley by compass and map. And we did another time. We went way up the valley and hiked across through the Shedder Camp area. And so that was a good experience. And a lot of the kids, I wanted to do that because a lot of the kids had never been in the woods. When I took over the troop, mostly all they did was play floor hockey. And so I wanted to get them out in the woods that I knew and loved. And then I got, of course, involved in minor hockey. I never played myself because I never had a pair of skates that fit. But anyhow, my son played, and I was one of the founding members of the Bedford Minor Hockey Association. And I was quite involved in the community. They call it volunteerism, but you didn't think of that. It was just something that, you know, needed to be done, and you did it, I guess. But, you know, you get to know a lot, and I still have kids that come up and say, "Hey, Mr. Turner," no idea who they were, but he had them in scouts, or he had them in my property on Union Street, River Road. It was a big piece of property, and I went back 700 feet pretty near to the bicentennial, so I cut it out and made a trail and put lights up there, and then the kids used to coast down there in the wintertime, and they called it Midnight Mountain. And so when I retired, we used to go to Florida, and then I'd leave the shed open, they'd go in and turn the lights on, and they'd coast. And I have kids come to me and say, you know, "I used to coast on Midnight Mountain." So that's good, and I never had any trouble with, you know, vandalism or kids or anyhow. It's been a good place to grow up. I can't think of anywhere that I'd, now looking back, rather grow up than here. I remember when I was quite young, and we went to the Anglican Church. My mother taught Sunday school there, but my grandmother had a store where Ray Frederick's Insurance is now. She had a little variety store there, and she had the house behind. And So Sunday, so we'd go down to church, and my two sisters and I, and then after church we'd go up to my grandmother's, and we'd go in, and my aunt would play the piano, and we'd sing a couple of hymns, and then my grandmother would say, "Now, what did you learn in Sunday school today?" So we'd tell her, and then she'd say, "Well, come on out," and we'd go out in the store, and she'd get us each a little bag of candy, and there's good memories there, and there were always a lot of soldiers around, and the troop trains used to come in through with all the soldiers heading overseas, and quite often, for some reason or other, they'd stop in Bedford, and you know, you'd talk to them on board, and you always wonder, you know, what happened to them all, and it's good times and bad times.
Yeah.